Would you turn to the prophet Isaiah? Isaiah the prophet, the first chapter, and verse 21. I've said before how often we look back at biblical times, especially the times in which people like Isaiah and other great men and women of God lived, and we think they were the great glory days. And yet here, Isaiah is pointing out that the people of God are in a sorry state. Verse 21, how the faithful city has become a harlot. And I would suggest the faithful city there is Jerusalem. And there's some wonderful irony in that verse, because harlotry is the opposite of being faithful. So she who was once faithful is faithful no more. That city which at the time of David and Solomon and even further back, Melchizedek, is faithful no more. It used to be a place of the just, known for righteousness, but now it is a place known for murderers. And we just prayed 5 or 10 minutes ago regarding the bill in Parliament, or the amendment to the bill in Parliament, which, thank God, was rejected. And I had a discussion with someone the other day regarding, as a country, are we better off now than we were, say, 50 years ago? And this person argued, well, we are better off now. So, for example, it's no longer acceptable to get behind the wheel of a car while you are drunk. Once upon a time, it might have been. Crimes against children are more likely to be reported and the perpetrator dealt with. People no longer starve. And yet at the same time, we have a habit of killing children. More than we used to. We've always killed children. But now we do it and it's all above board. And we pay for it. And we don't like people who object to it. And here, the faithful city, Jerusalem, which once was a place where righteousness lodged, is now a place where murderers flourish. Your silver has become dross, your wine mixed with water. In other words, it is no longer pure. That which characterizes the city is no longer valuable. Silver is better than dross. Wine better than water. The princes rebel. Now, a prince there means a ruler, somebody in authority, somebody you might expect to keep law and order. But in fact, they are the rebellious ones. They are in rebellion to God. And instead of punishing and judging thieves, they are the companions of them. They wink at them, they cavort with them, they are at one with them. Everyone loves bribes. In other words, if you want something to be achieved, you must grease a palm. People are following after rewards. And ancient Jerusalem has sunk to a particularly low, low. Furthermore, what do they not do? They do not defend the fatherless, and nor are they interested in the cause of the widow. Why not? Because the fatherless and the widow cannot afford the bribe. They are not sufficiently important or significant or influential to persuade the powerful ones to hear their cause and act upon it. So the marginalized continue to be marginalized further, while the murderers and the thieves are tolerated and encouraged. It has all gone wrong. And Jerusalem here is not a place where anybody would want to live apart from the most vile people. In the next section of the prophecy, God resolves to do something about it. The mighty one. He will rid himself of his adversaries and revenge his enemies. And here he's not talking of the Hittites or the Amalekites or the Egyptians or the Babylonians. He's talking about the very city in which his temple is built and his name was known. A just God could not do otherwise. A fair God cannot sit back while the weak and the destitute are ignored, but the thief and the murderer is promoted. He will rid himself of these people. He will avenge what they have done. I will turn my hand against you. What a terrifying prospect to have that, the hand of God against you. And thoroughly purge away your dross and take away all your alloy. And typically for Isaiah, he is foretelling judgment, but within that message of doom, there is hope. To purge is to cleanse. And yet there is an implication in the word that perhaps it would be a painful cleansing, to purge. And the silver will be purified. The impurities will be removed. They will be pure. I will restore your judges as at the first, and your counselors as at the beginning. So God is willing to restore the faithless city, but there will be a purging before there is a restoration. And we know that Jerusalem was attacked, not only by the Assyrians, but later on by the Babylonians, and they destroyed it. The temple was destroyed. The people were carried away, people like Daniel, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. And for 70 years and more, the people of God were exiled from that city. When they came back with Ezra and Nehemiah, they really were a different people. Now, when Christ came to them, they were stiff-necked. But they were no longer idolatrous. There was a zeal in Israel after the exile Never again did they go after Baal. Never again did they raise the Asherah poles. Of idolatry, they were purged. And when one is willing to take a bribe, to wink at thievery, to rebel, to ignore the fatherless, to care not for the widow, they in fact are symptoms of a godless heart. No one who loves God with all his heart, all his soul, all his body, all his mind, can ignore the destitute, the weak, the fatherless, the widow. They cannot take a bribe in good conscience. They cannot tolerate the thief and the murderer. That is why, as believers, we do find the abortion issue emotive. We are affected by it. Our love for God gives us a love for each other. Oh, I know that love is not always as pure and as evident as it always ought to be. But it's there. It is one of the hallmarks of being a child of God. But within this pronouncement of judgment, there is hope for the future. God will chastise his people that they might be purified. He will purge them that they might be the silver of old and not the dross of the present time. Afterward, you shall be called the city of righteousness, the faithful city. Well, in verse 21, the faithful city has become a harlot. At the end of the section, once again, she has become the faithful city. Is she that faithful city now? I'm not so sure. But then, though he might be talking of physical Jerusalem in verse 21, he might not be in the 26th verse, but rather talking about the community of New Jerusalem, which will be righteous forever and faithful forever. Well, Isaiah, I think, was talking specifically about his time, though I think he was seeing a time perhaps not yet even come. And we continue to live in a world which is very much like verses 21 to 23. And judgment is coming against our world, very much like verses 24 to 25. But purity and righteousness will also come, as we have in that final verse. And we are before the great judgment. We are before the coming of New Jerusalem. But we should be encouraged. One of the difficulties of living in an increasingly godless country, in a definitely godless time, is that we don't always remember the promise. Can you imagine a time when there is no death, there is no killing, no selfishness? I've never seen it. It's hard to imagine. But Isaiah saw it. And it wasn't in his day, and it might not be in ours, but it is coming. And through the gospel, every thief, every harlot, every murderer, every rebel is purified of his dross and the alloy removed. And we are a community of the righteous. We are going to go to that faithful city. And we are little outposts of it now. I think of the Pilgrim Fathers, which went off to America. All in those ships bobbing around on the ocean. But they were going to get to that destination. Well, we are bobbing around on a particularly dangerous ocean. But we are going to get there. So, sin is abounding. Judgment is imminent. But restoration is promised. Amen.